It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
It's Friday. Friday on my mind. Oh, Friday. Yeah, it's Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS.
That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind.
Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you on a First Amendment Friday night. What better subject to throw out in front of you than one that comes out of North Carolina? And it involves the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. And I want to remind you, the Congress begins with a prayer. The Senate begins its meetings with a prayer. Most city councils begin with some kind of invocation of God or a prayer. Most state lawmakers or legislatures begin with a prayer. But now, the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld a lower court ruling that found that officials in North Carolina, again, this is coming out of the 4th Circuit Court of Appeals, have violated the law and that it's unconstitutionally coercive to begin the city council meetings in this town, Richmond, in North Carolina, with a prayer, with an invocation. Can you imagine how ridiculous that is with all the different bodies in America that begin their official public meetings of a government body with an invocation? And now the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals says that that is unconstitutionally coercive for the Rowan County commissioners to begin their meetings with a prayer. Absolutely crazy. First Amendment Friday is about your point of view. I'm glad to open up the lines, and as always, naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Our quick poll, would you feel safer in a town where everyone is required to own a gun? There is such a town in Colorado. There are a few of them around the United States of America. And actually, I think it's a very sensible policy. I would say yes to that quick poll question. You can vote by going to LarsLarson.com. And tonight's quick poll is brought to you by AMAC. Join by calling them up, 888-262-2006, or go online to amac.us, not .com. AMAC's better. Better for you and better for America. To your calls now on this First Amendment Friday. Let's go first to Tim in Northern California. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I wanted to speak on the health care that everybody's talking about a little bit. I got to tell you, I've been waiting 10 years for surgery. Hurt myself at work. The guy had no comp, workers' comp.
Sorry to
hear that. Yeah, me too. I've held a full-time job since the age of 14. I love working. I love supporting myself. I don't want a free ride. Never have. 55. I'm just waiting to get back to work. Well, these people keep spatting off about these entitlements that it's everybody's right to have health care. You know what? They don't want to work. And here's the problem. In prisons in California right now, taxpayers are paying for transgender operations for murderers, rapists, and everything else. It's unconscionable. It's just completely unreasonable. And California's gone so far off the liberal deep end, if the earthquake doesn't put it into the ocean, the liberals will.
I couldn't agree with you more. And Tim, by the way, you want to really get hot under the collar? I'm glad to see that the House of Representatives passed the National Defense Authorization Act today. We need to beef up our military. But one of the things that Republicans refused to do, many of them voted for it, but there was an amendment that would have forbidden the U.S. military from spending any money on transgender, gender reassignment surgery or treatments or drugs, unless it was for psychological treatment, just psychological counseling. That amendment was proposed by a good Republican. I'll have to look up her name. But the Congress voted it down. And there were a couple of dozen Republicans who voted against the amendment that would have forbidden spending money on transgender surgery. So even though we have a conservative Congress and a conservative president, we have a military that will spend some of its money, instead of spending it on bombs and bullets and pay raises for American service members, we're going to spend some of it on providing transgender treatments.
Right. And it's completely asinine in my book. Now, that being said, I have a transgender daughter. I don't agree with it, but it's not for me to agree or disagree. I love this child no matter what she does. And from the day she was born, you know, I absolutely adore her.
I think we would, wouldn't we all feel the same way, though? But that's a personal issue, right? And
yeah,
your point is
exactly.
That your daughter can do what she chooses to do, but if she turns around and says to the people of America, I want to get surgery and hormone treatment, and you have to pay for it because I'm entitled to it, I agree with you. That's off base. Let's go to Cody. Hey, Cody, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
It's a pleasure to be with you. So I was just curious. So I listen to your show a lot, and that's actually where I get most of my information on what's kind of going on in the world, and I really value your opinion and your insight.
Thank you.
So the reason I'm calling today is so listening to all the naysayers talk about Trump and Russia and everything, I was just curious on why everyone's so against Russia. From what I've heard and what I've learned, that Russia is a powerhouse, and so I think being allies with them and being friends would be very beneficial. So I don't know why everyone doesn't like Russia.
Well, look, I could put it this way. I think Vladimir Putin is a bad guy, and I can see that, and I've made the case before, that if we could get together with him on certain issues and you know, for all fighting terrorism, and that benefits us and it benefits Russia, and they're willing to help us with that, I'm in favor of it. On the other hand, do I trust Vladimir Putin? No. I think he's a bad guy. And I could give you a list of reasons why I think he's a bad character, a bad actor. So I guess the question is do you want to get in bed with or cooperate with somebody who can help you on some issues but is very, very bad on other issues? So, I mean, I can't very well stand here and tell you that I think Iran is a danger to the United States in its development of nuclear weapons, but we should help out Russia without admitting that Russia is aiding and abetting Iran in its nuclear ambitions. So it's a tough spot to be in. Because do you say, well, then even if Russia could help us to deal with the Islamic State terrorists, and even if they could help us by cooperating with us on other problems where we agree, should we take their help if we also know they're helping the Iranians to become nuclear armed, and that's an existential threat to the United States? How would you answer that one?
That's a good question. That's tough to answer. I think that any aid that, you know, we can get from other countries and any aid that we can give that benefits both parties is probably in the best interest, even though, you know, he's a bad character. I mean, I'm curious if the Russia, most of the people think that maybe Trump's a bad guy, but kind of see the same view that we do, that, you know, we could help them, we could, you know, they could help us, but they might think that Trump's bad, we think that Putin's bad. And so I'm curious if they have that kind of same view.
You know, I don't know, but consider this, too. During the Obama era, the 8 years of Obama, when there was the Russian reset, the media thought it was just peachy keen. When Hillary Clinton, you know, was basically dealing nicely with Russia, right? That was a good thing. When President Obama promised sotto voce into a hot mic that he would give Comrade Vladimir more cooperation after the 2012 election, the major media did not, you know, come unglued the way they're coming unglued about Trump. So there's also a double standard in how we're being told the story. During Obama, cooperation with and getting along with Russia was a good thing, even though Russia was a bad actor during that time. They went into Ukraine. They went into Syria. They set up permanent bases. They made the whole situation with Bashar al-Assad more complicated for us. And that was a bad thing. But the media didn't have a problem with it until it was something being done by Donald Trump. And as soon as Trump did it, I'm frankly convinced that for most of the network reporters, like those at the Chicken Noodle News Network, if Donald Trump said he liked motherhood and apple pie, the media would spend the next 20 hours discussing why that was a bad deal. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
More honestly provocative talk right now on The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program on First Amendment Friday. Your calls are always welcome. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And it's a pleasure to welcome to the program Christina Martin, who's an attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation. And we talk to PLF from time to time because they seem to take on really righteous causes. Christina, how are you on this Friday night?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on your show.
So you've alerted people to a really crazy problem coming out of Michigan, but it seems, I've done a little checking, it seems as though this is the kind of thing that can happen in slightly different forms in a lot of states around America where, to put it simply, if you don't pay your property taxes in America in a county, at some point the county will seek to seize your property for unpaid property taxes. And if your property is one that you own outright, that is, you finish paying the mortgage, when the county takes the property, they can sell the property to satisfy the tax debt, but tell everybody where the excess money goes if there's any money left over after that sale.
Well, even if you only owe a few dollars, the county will pocket all of the proceeds from the tax sale. We think that's unconstitutional, so we've asked the Supreme Court to take our client's case and overturn this terrible law.
Well, and in fact, we'll explain why it's unconstitutional, but how widespread is this problem? Do you know where it goes beyond Michigan?
Well, there's a handful of states. I know it's fairly common in Arizona, and as I understand it, Oregon is still doing this practice.
They are.
Yeah. North Dakota, Minnesota, which in Minnesota is particularly strange because their Supreme Court about 100 years ago said that the right to the surplus is an inherent right. It's an inalienable right, in other words. It doesn't come from the government. It's a right we're born with. And I think Minnesota was dead on. There's a few other states that have other practices, some that give you a short window of time to try and claim it, though it's a little bit antiquated and hard to say whether you can actually get it. Most states, though, do protect your right to the surplus proceeds.
Well, let's talk about what happened in, just to give people a practical example of how this works, Van Buren County in Michigan and the Wayside Church. What did they have and what happened?
Well, Wayside Church owned a parcel of land in western Michigan that it used for a youth camp. Wayside Church is headquartered in Chicago. It's a small, struggling church. And when they began to have some pretty serious financial problems, and in 2011 could not pay their property taxes. So in 2014, the county foreclosed, sold the property for $206,000. They only owed $16,000. $750 in taxes, and much of that was actually penalties, interest, and fees. For people who get behind on their taxes, they probably know that the interest rates are quite high, and there's a lot of fees that get and penalties that get tacked on. So the government was already making a profit off them, but that wasn't enough, so they took all of the money, $206,000.
Which means that the county got a windfall of $189,250. Before we get to the Fifth Amendment issues, is there any reasoning or logic that Van Buren County or the state of Michigan uses to say why they would be justified in keeping the excess?
Well, they say that, first, obviously, the law says it, and therefore nothing else matters. But they also say that, well, you should have sold your property. Now, that's a nice theory, but we have one of our clients, Henderson Hodgins, lost his childhood home and farm that he grew up on, his inheritance, because he had an unexpected health problem. And that left him, he was expecting to be able to pay on time, but, you know, after you're in the hospital, bills mount up, and it's really hard to sell a property in that short amount of time.
Well, and what did he end up owing? What did he actually owe in taxes, and what was his house worth?
He owed $5,900. Probably about half of that was actually taxes, and that the rest is interest and fees and whatnot. And they sold it for almost $48,000, and they kept all of the money.
All of the money. So he would have otherwise received $40,000. Let's get to the Fifth Amendment issue, because how does the Fifth Amendment apply to this case? I think I know, but you're the attorney.
Well, the Fifth Amendment says that government cannot take property unless it pays just compensation for that private property. And the problem here is the government obviously doesn't have to pay compensation for that portion that it has a lien on, that it, you know, you owe the government that amount. But the government's trying to say they can swallow up all the rest of your property without having to worry about that just compensation clause. They say that when you don't, when you're late on your property taxes, you basically lose your constitutional rights. And we think that's completely backwards. And there are some lower court opinions that agree with us on that point. And we've gone to the Supreme Court to ask them to take this case and hold once and for all that this, your property rights are protected under the takings clause.
Well, and I'm not disparaging Mr. Hodgkins, who owned the property, but if you went out to put on the market a farm for $47,000, that's not a huge sum of money. But it also may not be an attractive property, you know, even at that price, to a lot of people. And as you say, a property like that may take some time to sell. In the case of the church, if you go out and say, we'd like to sell a youth camp to you, well, where are the buyers for youth camps? Well, I would imagine that they are relatively few and far between, and they're probably limited by geography in that, you know, in this case, it was a Chicago church that owned this youth camp that was sold for $206,000. But I mean, what is the marketplace for selling a youth camp? You know, another charity or a Boys and Girls Club or something?
Yeah, probably not big. But I think that you know, it's just unreasonable to demand that people have to always be on top of everything, and then if you're not, you lose your constitutional rights. The point of the Constitution is to protect people from overreach from the government.
Now, when do you get a decision about whether or not you can take this one straight to the U.S. Supreme Court? And if they do, it'll apply everywhere in America.
That's right. We filed our petition earlier this week, and so the government will have to respond. And so we expect, you know, by the time they file their petition, or maybe they'll ask for an extension, it'll be a few months, and then the court will schedule it. And sometimes they schedule and reschedule conferences to decide whether they're going to take petitions. But I expect we'll know by late fall.
You know what's funny is I checked in my neck of the woods. I happen to live in a county called Multnomah County. It's an Indian name. And I said, do you do this? And they said, oh, yeah, we do that. And I said, how much did you do of that last year? And they said, $1.5 million worth of properties in one county. And I said, well, where does the money go? And they said, oh, it goes to a fund for low-income housing. Well, I can imagine, you know, just if I were writing public policy, Christina, which sometimes I talk about on this show, I might suggest that if the county had simply sold the property for taxes owed with an agreement that whoever buys it has to bring it up to code within a certain period of time. I know upstate New York has done that with a lot of properties, and they actually keep the housing in the hands of, say, the low-income buyer who's really good with a hammer and a saw but doesn't have a lot of money, who might say, yeah, I can buy that house for $16,000. It would still cheat the property owner out of the rest of their equity, but it just simply taking the money and then tossing it into a fund and saying, we're helping out the low-income people by cheating other low-income people out of their property doesn't seem like a morally correct way to go.
No, it's pretty crazy. And what you actually will find if you look at this across the country, there's been quite a lot of studies that have shown the people who are hurt the most by these laws are particularly the elderly and at very high rates, as well as the ill, disabled people, and people who just, you know, they're hospitalized, and so they aren't able to make their payments. And so it is really the government is taking from basically the poor and then giving it over to other poor people.
It's not exactly Robin Hood, is it? Christina, thank you so much, and thanks for the work you do at Pacific Legal.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. It's First Amendment Friday, and you've got the Lars Larson Show.
Naysayers go to the head of the line on the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you on a First Amendment Friday night. I'm glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Jenny Beth Martin joins me now, and she's been gone too long, the co-founder of the Tea Party Patriots. Jenny Beth, good to have you back on.
Oh, it's always good to be with you, Lars.
So what's it going to take for Americans to communicate the message to the Senate that we want something done about Obamacare and we want it done now? We're not willing to wait until later this year or, God forbid, into an election year next year.
We need to pick up the phones Monday morning and Tuesday and just melt those phone lines. It's what it's going to take. They're very likely going to move with a motion to proceed on Tuesday with the bill that Senator Mitch McConnell introduced yesterday. And this bill that he introduced yesterday, it still doesn't repeal Obamacare. He said it was going to include the Ted Cruz, Mike Lee Consumer Freedom Amendment, and it only includes half of it, and it doesn't go far enough. It's not going to reduce prices, and it's just they're not feeling Obamacare.
No, they're not, and for some reason, I mean, there are bits and pieces of both packages from the House and the Senate that I think are adequate or they're a good start, and I'm also willing to accept that given the fact that we have some rhino Republicans on Capitol Hill in the Senate, that we're probably not going to get the ideal bill that you and I would like. But I would like to at least see them get a start at knocking out some of the mandates and some of the other requirements and say it has to be just a start. Because, you know, while some of my listeners will call in and say, let's just demand that they repeal the whole thing, I say, well, first of all, they can't get the votes for a partial repeal. They're never going to get the votes for a full repeal. So that one's not even in the cards, is it?
I don't want to say never. It's never in the cards.
How about not in 2017?
It's not happening right now. It's simply not happening. I understand the anger and the frustration that every one of your listeners has. I have been fighting this bill since 2009, and I can't even tell the number of hours and days and weeks and months I've spent away from my family trying to get this thing repealed. I'm disgusted with what we're seeing. But what you said is, I think, where we may wind up being, which is, all right, we may not get everything we want. I know for certain it's not going to be the bill that I want. If we can at least make some headway and truly repeal portions of it so we begin to get relief for those of us who have been so deeply impacted by the higher prices and lower quality care, then it's a first step. And we live to fight another day and we keep going back and working to repeal more. But I get it. I'm just as angry as every one of you. I lost sleep over it last night because I thought that what I was hearing was truly in good faith from Senator McConnell and the Senate leadership that they were going to include the Cruz-Lee Amendment. But they did not include it.
Jenny Beth, we should help people out. And you tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm not as studied up on this as some people are. But as I understand the Cruz-Lee Amendment, it says we want to allow insurance companies to sell a bare-bones package of health insurance for consumers who want to buy that, as long as the health insurance company also sells the more full-tilt package, which I'm sure most Americans are not going to buy. They're going to buy what their family can afford. And if we had that kind of compromise, you'd be able to give people some choices and treat them like consumers again. Why was the Senate unwilling to put that in?
The other thing that you would do, not just be able to give them some choices, you would be able to show that the Obamacare compliant, the regulations that are driving the cost of health care up. And by that, what I mean is 26-year-old adult children being on their parents' insurance. And look, you know what? If you want to do that, great. It just shouldn't be mandated. That's kind of how I feel about it. The senior citizens who are having to buy maternity coverage when they're never going to be pregnant again, or never could have been pregnant in the first place. That's the essential health benefits. And then there's also what's called community rating. Instead of rating insurance based on the kind of people that are in the pool that you're purchasing insurance from and pricing it at that level, it's rating it based on your geographic area. And then also there's a pre-existing condition mandate. Those are what I mean.
Jenny,
these are the
Oh, you dropped out for a second there. I'm sorry about that, Jenny.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the heart and soul of Obamacare. Now, what the Cruz Lee amendment was going to do is show that when you don't have to buy all, something with all of those regulations, you can see the difference in the prices. So there would be transparency. But what they're saying now is whether you buy a regulation compliant one or a bare bones minimum, you're going to be all put in the same risk pool, and you will share the risk and the cost with everyone else in that pool. It eliminates the ability to lower the prices and to compare the difference between free markets and government regulations.
See, and that's the thing I want to see, because I know that there are people who put all kinds of faith in government. I think government could screw up an ice cream sundae, and I think there's proof of it out there almost every day when you look at the way the government does things. On the other hand, the private sector is very efficient at doing things, because in the private sector, if you don't supply what the people need at a price that's appropriate, then you go out of business. But in the government, if you fail to supply what the people need, you just demand that the people pay more in taxes, which is exactly what the Democrats are asking right now. They're saying we could make Obamacare work if you just pump another 10 or 20 or $30 billion into it.
Right. And, you know, I want to say one thing. You're absolutely right. That's what they were saying. And I think that Obamacare, someone earlier today interviewed me and said that they thought Obamacare was designed to fail. I think that Obamacare was designed to be a step towards single payer, where there's no insurance choice and there's just one kind of insurance and one provider. That's what I think that it was. So it was an incremental step to get to a, now, I'll grant you a very huge increment, but to get to single payer. And when you think of it that way, the things that we're saying, like, okay, it's not going to be full repeal, but at least we can show that our ideas and can free markets can make a difference. That can be a step towards full repeal, because we can go and make the arguments for it.
Well, and I know that there are people out there who say, well, if we just lay down an ultimatum that we have to do it this way. No, that's not going to get it. It's not going to get Susan Collins out of Maine. It's not going to get some of the other rhinos out there. It certainly isn't going to get a Paul Ryan if we say we demand a full repeal and nothing else. I know there are conservatives who think if we simply lay down an ultimatum that it'll produce a result. I think the ultimatum is guaranteed to fail. And unfortunately, I think our leadership has been guaranteeing it to fail. Paul Ryan is the one who spent 5 years supposedly practicing for the repeal of Obamacare and passing all kinds of bills that never got Obama's signature, and said, we're ready to go. He goes out and tries for 17 short days to repeal it the first time, and they come up with this, you know, half-assed scheme, and they produce nothing, and he announces at the end of that, when they didn't even have a vote, well, I guess that's it. We're stuck with Obamacare for the foreseeable future. In other words, he brought a losing attitude toward this battle, and McConnell hasn't been much better. So I think the biggest problem Republicans have right now, unfortunately, is Republicans.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I can't even call them leaders, because they're not leaders. They're not winning people over. They're not convincing people to follow them. They're just making people angry. The emails that I have received this week and then today, the anger that people feel towards Republicans right now, it's palpable in email.
And it's appropriate as well. Jenny Beth, thank you very much. From the Tea Party Patriots, the co-founder of the group. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Vote in today's quick poll now at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to take your calls. And a little reminder, I like to go hunting in the fall. And one of my hunting buddies is a rancher by the name of Rex Christensen. And a few years ago, Rex was complaining to me that he had pins and needles in his feet. He does a lot of hard physical work every day. And I only get a chance to see him in the fall when I go out for elk and deer. And he said those pins and needles in his feet just dogged him all day long. And I suggested, why don't you take some of the relief factor that I take every day? And he did. And I said, give me your unvarnished opinion. Don't feed me a, you know, don't blow smoke, but tell me what it does for you. Well, it turns out it fixed the problem. Greatly diminished the pain, the aches and pains that he was feeling. And that's the problem that a lot of Americans have. Just plain old everyday living and overexertion and exercise and, of course, aging can bring about that pain. Well, Relief Factor goes after the inflammation that causes it. It has four key ingredients, and I recommend it. I take it every day. And sometimes a couple of times a day if I know I'm going to go out and do some extra yard work. The three-week quick start is $19.95, about 95 cents a day, less than the cost of a cup of coffee every day. For pain relief, visit ReliefFactor.com. One word, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384. Germix, is it Jeremy?
It's Jeremic.
Jeremic, very good. I read it correctly. Jeremic, you're running for office in Lansing, Michigan, and you're listening on WILS. What's on your mind on this First Amendment Friday?
Yeah, I plan on being the next Lansing City Clerk come the election November 7th. I think it's crazy that invocation before meetings is becoming obsolete. I believe it is here in our city. And I think for legal action to be taken is just ridiculous. If there's no faith in a person's life, how can a young person grow underneath that leadership?
I don't see how they can. So at your city council meetings, the body that you'd like to work for is the clerk, or clerk or auditor, which one?
Clerk. Also, I'd be technically the secretary of the Board of Ethics.
Well, there you go. That's a good job to have. Then you can go out after all the Democrats. No, you'd go after both sides. But tell me this. Does the city council currently open its meetings with a prayer or an invocation of some kind?
Not from my understanding. Absolutely not. I ran for a city council at large as a write-in candidate back in 2013. And I was very adamant on going to almost every single every single committee of the whole, and also a lot of other meetings as well. And I don't recall ever hearing any type of invocation.
You know, because one of my producers was saying, "Well, do you think it's necessary?" And I said, "I don't think it's necessary. It's desirable." And I said, when I go to a meeting, and I've been to company meetings, actually of private companies. My wife used to work for a company called Aflac that you might be familiar with, and I went to one of their company meetings with her. And I said, I was really impressed. I told her boss, I said, you walk in, you're ready for the meeting. The meeting begins with an invocation. It begins with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. It began with the national anthem sung by a nice young lady with a nice voice. And I said, I think that's the proper way to start a meeting in the United States of America. Now, private companies can do it or not do it. But most city councils, most legislatures, the Congress begin with an invocation of God, and they begin with a prayer of some kind. In fact, the House of Representatives has a whole office that's called the Chaplain's Office. And I'm sure these, you know, these folks who hate religion or hate God, you know, the anti-the atheist types, would love to get rid of the Chaplain's Office. They'd probably get rid of all the chaplains who serve in the military and all the ones that have performed so many baptisms on the sands of Kuwait and places like that. As American service members are about to go into battle, they'd probably want to tear down all those bas-relief images that are inside the U.S. Supreme Court chambers. This is a country that has a foundation that's a Judeo-Christian foundation, and I think it's important that we remember that, and it's also important to remind people that our rights do not come from government. They come from God. They're protected by a constitution, but that constitution is not a grant of rights. It's merely telling the government, don't do anything to take away the rights that people have as an inalienable part of being born a human being.
That's right. I mean, I think a lot of these persons, if they understood the way countries like North Korea operate, they'd understand that it's not us as Christians that are trying to enforce religion onto a citizen.
Nope.
It's simply upholding our rights. You know, and I think they need to be informed, and they have to understand, to want to learn and to listen. And if they want to adopt it, they can. If they don't, well, don't bash me. You know, don't banter me 24/7 in my campaign.
Well, and here's what's really odd. In this decision that you and I are talking about, I mentioned it earlier today, the Fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals found that the prayer that was offered up at the beginning of the meetings of the Rowan County Commissioners in North Carolina was unconstitutionally coercive because the prayer was given by the commissioners themselves and whether their invitation for the audience to join them was coercive. I understand the legal argument. They're saying that if you're sitting there as an atheist or a non-believer, an agnostic, in a group of people, and the and a county commissioner stands up and gives the invocation and then says, if you'd like to join us, you may, that somehow this court sees that as coercive. I'll tell you what, Jeremick, since you're running for office, I know you know the answer to this question. What's the final phrase of every single speech by every single president of the United States?
I'm assuming God bless America.
Yeah, it's the way even Barack Obama, you know, who was part of that wackadoodle church in Chicago where they, you know, Jeremiah Wright did all kinds of crazy, crazy stuff. Even Barack Obama ended his speeches with God bless America. Is that not invoking God on the part of the highest ranking official in American government?
Well, you know, it's a tragedy. You look at our currency and you see in God we trust. I can remember entering high school in 2005, graduating in 2009. I don't remember pledging allegiance to our flag from 2006 on out. I do not remember being able to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. That is a catastrophe. And it needs to be reversed immediately.
I agree with you. Listen, if people want to find your website and find out more about your candidacy for the clerk's position there in Lansing, where do they find the info online?
It's going to be www.claiborneforlansing.com. You can simply Google Claiborne III, and I'll pop right up.
Well, I really appreciate your phone call, and good luck to you in your run for office.
Thank you so much, Lars. You have a great night.
And by the way, God bless your candidacy, too. And that's an invocation of God. And no, it's not intended to be coercive. You know, real Christians believe that you can tell people about the Word. You can tell people about the book, and they're going to find their way to the book. And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with county commissioners in Rowan County, North Carolina, giving a little invocation at the front end of their meetings. They need the help from God. Just remember what Ben Franklin said. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.